Afternoon segment of our program, Tanakh in a Day, Tanakh tour of the land of Israel. It is wonderful to see so many of you back. We had, thank God, as many of you know, from this morning, we had 100 people on and more this morning. And we always debate about whether the afternoon will be the same draw as the morning. Right now it's half the draw of the morning, but I have hopes. I am putting the link in the chat once again. Someone sent me a message in the chat asking about why they can't see anything, and I don't know. I'm able to see. I think others are able to see. So I think it may be on your computer's side. I don't know. I'm gonna launch right in. We have a lot to talk about between now and 4 o'clock. I've actually set an email to go out right after the program ends today with links to the recordings, opportunities for feedback. I'd love to hear from you in response to that email when it comes out about your experience today. The program as a whole is sponsored by Serena and David Koshitsky in memory of Riva Koshitsky, Zichrona Livracha. This particular class is dedicated by Dalia and Faroah Hakimi in memory of Dalia's parents, Freda Grosser, Zichrona Livracha, and Samuel Grosser, Zichrona Livracha. It is also dedicated by Tova and Alan Gutenberg in honor of the wonderful work the Beit Midrash does. Thank you. And dedicated by Shoshana Shapira, Leah and Yaakov Hollander, and Orly and Leslie Reich, in loving memory of their dear mother, Hadassah Bas Avram, Allah Shalom, on her fourth Yartzeit, the 26th of Tevet. So thank you all for dedicating. I just put the link in the chat once again for the source sheet. I will also put a link in the chat for a separate item we mentioned this morning. Our Avreich Idan Rakovsky has set up a new WhatsApp group that we hope to use in order to disseminate Torah as well as announcements of upcoming programs. And I just put the link in the chat for anyone who wants to sign up for that WhatsApp group. So our topic for this session is Judgment Day, Emek Yehoshaphat, the Valley of Jehoshaphat. There's a lot to talk about here, and I gave you some links at the top of the page. I'm going to be referencing them at different times within the session. The first one is a series that I gave last year. I mentioned it in my class this morning as well. And that was my series on the battlefields of biblical Israel. So if you go to that link, you will see you'll see classes on two other valleys, not the Valley of Jehoshaphat, but the Valley of Elah, the Valley of Ayalon. And you may find that interesting and connected to what we're going to talk about this afternoon. The valley we are about to discuss, in Hebrew, Emek Yehoshaphat, the Valley of Jehoshaphat, is identified in a Tanakh, in the book of Yoel, the book of Joel, chapter 4, as the place of an ultimate showdown, a judgment day. God gathers all of the nations there, all of the enemies of the Jews, and he demolishes them. Where in the world is this valley? So if you look at the source sheet, I'm going to put the link in the chat again because I see people keep joining, which is not a bad thing. Keep on joining. But if you look at the first source on the source sheet, I gave you a map made by Tamar Yardeni. It's available on the on Hebrew Wikipedia. And it is in Hebrew. I'll explain it, though. On the left side of the map, you see Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount. On the eastern side of the map is Har HaZeitim, the Mount of Olives. And what's in between those two is Emek Yehoshaphat, the Valley of Jehoshaphat. For those who read Hebrew, you will also see there something called Nachal Kidron, which I'm going to explain in a moment. But this is where the Valley of Jehoshaphat is. It is located between the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives. And we see that in a letter written by Ramban Nachmanides. This is a very, very well-known letter. I could tell you a lot of stories about this letter. But this is a letter in which he gives his son ethical instruction. And it appears, it's printed in many Sidurim, many traditional prayer books, but not with this line which appears at the end. Take a look at source number 2. He writes, this is in my translation, I ascended to the Mount of Olives, facing the Temple Mount and near it. There is nothing between them but the Valley of Jehoshaphat. There, facing the Temple Mount, I read my verses with great weeping And he goes on for a little bit. So he references the location of the Valley of Jehoshaphat, saying this is where it is, between the Temple Mount and the Mount of Olives. It shows up in a medieval work called Kaftar Vaferach, which also presents Israeli geography, a letter by Rabbi Ovadia Bar Tanura, and other places as well. I did see one writer, Rabbi David Ibn Abi Zimra, also known as Radbaz, who in the 16th century said it's south of the Temple Mount, but I don't really understand that. As I understand it, it really is east. Rabbi Yitzchak Levy quotes a Professor Garciel as suggesting that the valley is to be identified with Nachal Kidron, which I mentioned earlier and which you see on the source sheet. He talks about different parts of Nachal Kidron. Also very interesting, but not something I'm going to discuss a whole lot right now. What I want to talk about in our session is, why does God hold this ultimate day of this showdown with the nations in a valley in particular? What's the message for us? That's where I want to go. So I have to unpack the question somewhat. In Tanakh, valleys are frequently places of war. And I gave you a list in source number 3 on the sheet. You have a valley called Emek HaMelech, the Valley of the King, which early on in the book of Genesis, Parshas Lech Lecha, is a place where 4 kings battle 5 kings. Then, in the book of Shoftim, Judges, you have the Valley of Yisrael, Emek Yisrael, where Midian and their allies invade Israel and fight a war. Then you have in the book of Samuel a Philistine attack in the Valley of Elah. And that, of course, is where David and Goliath have their battle. You have another attack of theirs in Emek Rephaim, the Valley of Rephaim. Ammon and Moab invade Israel in Chronicles 2, chapter 20. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later. That's in a place called Emek Bracha. So valleys are often associated with battle in Tanakh. Not always. I'm not saying that you know, whenever you see a valley, think war, but often. Yes, often that is true. But here, there is no war. There's no war that's going to happen in the Valley of Jehoshaphat. God is going to bring the enemies there, and then he's going to destroy them. There's no battle, per se. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at source number 4, you find Professor Yechezkel Kaufman, who writes the following. This is my translation. The nations do not ascend against Jerusalem, talking about in this story with the Valley of Jehoshaphat. The nations do not ascend against Jerusalem as in the visions of Isaiah, Micha, and Zechariah. Certainly there is no resemblance between Yoel's vision and the vision of Gog and Magog in Yechezkel, which we're going to talk about. They do not besiege Jerusalem. They do not attack the cities of Judea. They, the nations, are gathered to the Valley of Jehoshaphat, which is certainly a visionary place. They come as though for war, but a kind of spirit brings them to the Valley of Jehoshaphat, the God of justice. There God sits to judge them. This is Yoel's new vision. God does not appear as a military commander or warrior on the day of battle. In other words, unlike other apocalyptic images, which describe a war at the end, before the messianic time, there's no war that's going to happen in our story. There is no assault on Jerusalem. So what exactly is the valley issue here? Why is this in a valley? What are we supposed to draw from this image? There is another valley in Tanakh where judgment takes place. In the story of Achan, after he takes from the spoils of Jericho, to go back to my session from this morning, but I'm not going to discuss that right now. What we're going to do is talk about this judgment day that is described in the book of Yoel, see the text itself from the book of Yoel, and understand the story of what happens in the valley, and then we'll come back to the why the valley is appropriate and what we're supposed to learn from it. That's what I want to accomplish in the 21 minutes remaining. So, when is judgment day in the Valley of Jehoshaphat? So I have to begin by acknowledging that not everybody agrees that the Valley of Jehoshaphat and the whole story about judgment there is in the future. Some actually argue that it already happened. And according to this view, the Valley of Jehoshaphat is actually named for a king, King Jehoshaphat, and it happened in his time. Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra takes that position, and he points to a battle in which the nations assembled and tried to fight against King Yehoshaphat. Let me give you a little bit of background in order to introduce that. I mentioned this morning that after the time of King Solomon, Israel split into two kingdoms, north and south. The southern kingdom, from Jerusalem and point south, is Yehuda or Judea. It is led by the son of King Solomon, Rehoboam. And then the northern kingdom is Yisrael. And initially, it's led by Yerovam ben Nevat, who was mentioned briefly this morning as well. The northern kingdom is called Yisrael. We're focusing right now on the southern kingdom. After King Rehoboam, the first king of that south, is a king named Avia. He's not so good. After Avia comes a king named Asa, who is phenomenally great. And after Asa comes King Yehoshaphat. So it's a few generations after King Solomon that we're talking about. King Yehoshaphat is wonderful. He gets into some trouble for his alliances. If you go back to the top of the source sheet where I gave you a set of links, the second link is from when we did our Tanakh Day on the theme, the Book of Failure. So I talked about Yehoshaphat in that on that day. Some of you were there. But there's a link for those who were not. Yehoshaphat overall was not a failure. He was extremely successful. He reinforces the cities of Judea. God is with him as God was with David. He gets rid of idolatry. He sets up teachers of Torah in Judea. Overall, he's really wonderful. The best place to read up on Jehoshaphat is the book of Chronicles, Divrei Hayamim, specifically the second volume, Divrei Hayamim Bet, chapters 17 to 20. He's very, very good. He's like King Solomon heyday level. He's also very wealthy. He also makes the mistake of marrying the sister of King Ahav, who we learned about this morning, not a good man. And that's where some of his troubles begin. Ahav persuades Yehoshaphat to go to war by his side. That story does not work out well. He gets rebuked. Yehoshaphat gets rebuked for having partnered with Ahav. And then we get to Chronicles 2, chapter 20. And that is the battle in the time of King Yehoshaphat. According to Ibn Ezra, this is the story of the Valley of Yehoshaphat. It's a story of a war. Take a look at source number 5. It did happen in a valley. The only question is whether it's the Valley of Yehoshaphat or not. But take a look at this source because it's really interesting to see what happened in this battle. After that, I'm not going into that. Moabites, Ammonites, together with some Ammonim, came against Yehoshaphat to wage war. The report was brought to Yehoshaphat. A great multitude is coming against you from beyond the sea, from Aram, and is now in Chatzetzon Tamar, that is Ein Gedi. Yehoshaphat was afraid. He decided to resort to the Lord, and he proclaimed a fast for all Judah. Everybody should pray, everybody should fast. This translation in source number 5 is courtesy of the JPS translation, 1985 edition. Then in the midst of the congregation of the Spirit of the Lord came upon Yahaziel, son of Zechariah, son of Benaiah, etc., etc., etc. And he said, "Give heed, all Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and King Yehoshaphat. Thus said the Lord to you, do not fear or be dismayed by this great multitude. The battle is God's, not yours. March down against them tomorrow as they come up. You will find them at the end of the wadi, in the direction of the wilderness. It is not for you to fight this battle. Stand by. Wait and witness your deliverance by the Lord, O Judah and Jerusalem. Do not fear or be dismayed. Go forth to meet them tomorrow, and the Lord will be with you." Next morning they arose, and they went forth to the wilderness of Tekoa. And as they went forth, Yehoshaphat stood and he said, "Listen to me, O Judah, inhabitants of Jerusalem. Trust firmly in the Lord your God, and you will stand firm. Trust firmly in his prophets, and you will succeed." There are interesting parallels between this and a line in Isaiah, but not for right now. After taking counsel with the people, he, King Yehoshaphat, stationed singers to the Lord, extolling the one majestic in holiness as they went forth ahead of the vanguard, saying, "Praise the Lord, for his steadfast love is eternal." As they began their joyous shouts and hymns, the Lord set ambushes for the men of Ammon, Moab, and the hill country of Seir who were marching against Judah, and they were routed. In other words, Yehoshaphat doesn't have to lift a finger in battle. He just has to stop, sing praises to God, and God takes care of everything. And you can see, they end up successful in this Emek Bracha, the Valley of Blessings. So Rabbi Avram Ibn Ezra says that that's the valley of Jehoshaphat. That's the story. If you look, I brought it for you in source number 6. He says, this was the war when Moab, Ammon, and Seir, a massive force, united. Jehoshaphat had from Judah and Benjamin, and the valley of Jehoshaphat is the valley of blessing, for Jehoshaphat named it thus. So according to him, this is an old story. This story is not a messianic story at all. The Valley of Jehoshaphat is not about Judgment Day. It's about a victory which God engineered for the Jews in ancient times. That's it. That's the way that he reads it. And when it said the Valley of Blessing, that is the Valley of Jehoshaphat. However, with due respect to Ibn Ezra, most commentators believe that the verses we're going to see from the book of Yoel are actually describing a future judgment day. And frankly, that's consistent with the book of Yoel on the whole. Some of you have learned the book of Yoel with me. If you look back at the beginning of the source sheet, I gave you a link to a series of classes I taught on the book of Yoel and a single class summary of it called Prophets of Repentance, Yoel. If you learn that book, you will find that the opening chapters certainly seem to be describing a future apocalyptic event. Some invasion, which is actually compared to locusts. And according to that read, which is the read of Rashi, which is the read of Don Isaac Abarbanel, which is the read of Malbim, all but Ibn Ezra, really, when you get down to it, they say that is the Valley of Jehoshaphat that Yoel is describing is about a future event, and it's a divine judgment day. And they say the word Jehoshaphat does not mean King Jehoshaphat. Rather, Jehoshaphat is a compound word. The Yud, He, Vav, beginning of the name, is the name of God. Shaphat, to judge. It is the valley of divine judgment. Don Isaac Abarbanel writes it. I brought it for you in source number 7. It is a joint name, as he calls it. Shem Meshutaf. Jehoshaphat, judgment of God, and he says it's Emek Jehoshaphat, it's a valley because there is depth. God's justice is deep. Radak says, you know, yeah, but it could be named for King Jehoshaphat also. It's not like you can't also have it be named for him, which is fine. We can give him his due. But that's the other read of it, is it's a future event. What is going to happen in that future judgment day? A gathering of the foes of the Jews, the people who do not like us. According to Radak, Rabbi David Kimchi, according to Malbim, this is the war of Gog and Magog. That's the way that they read it. The war of Gog and Magog is foretold in the 39th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, Yechezkel. I put it in source number 8. It is a war which takes place in which nations come to fight each other and then end up turning on the Jews. Don Isaac Abarbanel says, no, it's not Gog and Magog. He says it's a war between Islam and Christianity. In order to understand Abarbanel's perspective, you have to remember who he is. He is a leader of the Jews in Spain, Portugal, Italy, at the end of the 15th century, beginning of the 16th century. He personally experiences the expulsion from Spain. And remember that the expulsion from Spain takes place after the Reconquista, after the Christians have succeeded in taking back Spain from Islam, post-Crusades. So that's what's in his head. When you read his commentary, for example, to the book of Daniel, he tells you all about how there will be a future battle between Islam and Christianity. So if you look at what I brought you in source number 9, I'm not going to read it aloud, but you can see it there. He says that that's what's going on in the Valley of Jehoshaphat is going to be a refighting of the Crusades, in which the church is going to decide it's time to retake Israel, and Islam is going to come to defend Israel against the church. And that's what's going to bring everybody there. Whether you take the view that it's a war of Gog and Magog, whether you take the view that it's a war between Islam and Christianity, the commentators view this ultimate judgment day as an assembly of the nations who do not like the Jews on the doorstep of the Temple Mount in the Valley of Jehoshaphat. And now I turn your attention to source number 10. We keep talking about these verses in Yoel, in Joel. Let's see them. God says, After that, there is an invasion of Israel by armies like locusts. After that, I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and daughters shall prophesy. Your old men shall dream dreams. Your young men shall see visions. I will even pour out my spirit upon male and female slaves in those days. Everybody has prophecy. Before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes, I will set portents in the sky and on earth, blood, fire, pillars of smoke. Of course, you may recognize that line from the Haggadah. Why it's in the Haggadah is a great question for another time. The sun shall turn into darkness, the moon into blood. Everyone who invokes the name of the Lord shall escape. There shall be a remnant on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, as the Lord promised. Anyone who invokes the Lord will be among the survivors, but it's not survivors of war. There is no war. This is God and those nations. And that brings me to source number 11, the centerpiece, Joel chapter 4, the trial of the nations. For lo, in those days, and in that time, when I restore the fortune of Judah and Jerusalem, I will gather all the nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will contend with them over my very own people Israel. Contend with them meaning fight with them, which they scattered among the nations. For they divided my land among themselves, and they cast lots over my people. They bartered a boy for a zonah, and sold a girl for wine, which they drank. Look at those terrible things that they did to my children. They sold my children degradingly to pay for the services of a zonah to buy wine. It's the degradation that's central here. And God says, what is this that you are doing to me, O Tyre, Sidon, nations of the north, the districts of Philistia in the south and west? Are you requiting me for something I have done? Wow, reading the JPS translation is not fun. The way that I will take this sentence is the way that Radak, Rabbi David Kimchi, takes it. God says, do you think you're paying me back in some sense by what you do to the Jews? Do you think that you're doing something terrible against me by doing this to the Jews? God says, picking up in my translation in source number 11 from the JPS on the beginning of the sixth line, quick as a flash, I will pay you back, God says. You have taken my gold and my silver, have carried off my precious treasures to your palaces. You have sold the people of Judah, the people of Jerusalem, to the Ionians, Ionians being the Greeks. The Greeks are referenced here as a distant nation. Right? Eventually they become a near nation, but at this point they are distant. So that you have removed them far away from their homeland. Behold, I will rouse them to leave the place you have sold them to. I will pay you back. I will deliver your sons and daughters into the hands of the people of Judah. They will sell them into captivity to a distant nation, for the Lord has spoken. God says, I am going to bring punishment upon those nations who tortured the Jews. And then he says, proclaim this among the nations. Prepare for battle. Arouse the warriors. Let all the fighters come and draw near. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears, right? The opposite of the vision in Isaiah, right? It's the flip of that vision. Instead of beat your swords into plowshares, beat your plowshares into swords, you get ready to fight me, God says. Let even the weaklings say, I am strong. Rouse yourselves and come. All you nations come together from round about. There bring down your warriors. Let the nations rouse themselves and march up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there I will sit in judgment over all the nations round about. And by the way, the commentators here, Don Isaac Abarbanel and others, see this as a reference to not just an ultimate battle, but Tchiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead, the ultimate return of the dead. Those of you who were in Rabbi Anstandig's shiur this morning will remember Rabbi Shama was resurrected. We are seeing Tchiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection of the dead, in the valley of Jehoshaphat. Prepare for battle. Parenthetically, one of the problems with using a JPS translation is that they eliminate some of the poetry. The term that's used, prepare for battle, is kadshu milchama. Kadshu milchama. Kodesh usually means holy to people. What do you mean, consecrate yourselves for war? But the idea here is designation and dedication. Dedicate yourselves for this war, God is saying to the nations, because earlier in the book of Yoel, he said to the Jews, Kadeshu Tzom, dedicate yourselves for fasting and prayer. The nations will dedicate themselves for war. You dedicate yourselves for fasting and prayer. If you just read the JPS, you miss that. In any case, God summons them and says, come to me for battle. Let's see what happens. Beat your plowshares into swords. And of course, the ending in number 11, the last paragraph, swing the sickle for the crop is ripe. Come and tread. The winepress is full. The vats are overflowing. For great is their wickedness. Multitudes upon multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is at hand in the valley of decision. In the Hebrew, it's Emek HaCharutz. No time to discuss that right now. Sun and moon are darkened. Stars withdraw their brightness. The Lord will roar from Zion and shout aloud from Jerusalem so that heaven and earth tremble. Dot, dot, dot. And actually, the part after this from chapter 4, there is a rejuvenation of the land of Israel in a beautiful, beautiful way. That's the image that you see here, with a lot to be discussed. And if you go to the links that I gave you in the beginning of the source sheet, I discuss the verses more at length. But now that we know the following, we know that there is a Valley of Jehoshaphat, which could refer to an ancient war. That was the way Ibn Ezra took it. But everybody else says it's referring to a future time, a war of Gog and Magog, perhaps, a war of Christianity and Islam, perhaps. But it's not really a war. Rather, it's the nations being gathered to this spot next to the Temple Mount and God simply crushing them. So why is this in a valley? Why is it that the enemies of the Jews are going to be judged in a valley? So in the Torah, the place where an event occurs is seen as significant. I brought you an example in source number 12, where we're taught that the Torah is given in the Midbar, in the wilderness, in order to teach us that you have to be like a wilderness. You have to be open to all. You have to be humble in order to receive the Torah. We learn lessons from the places where things happen. Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, is a low mountain, also meant to teach us humility. The place where something happens affects the psychology of the participant. There's a psychology to being in a valley. I'm skipping source number 13. No time for that right now, but source number 14. When we talk about being in a valley, you have high areas around you, and you're in a low space. The image is humility. Right? Like in source number 14, Mima Makim Kraticha Hashem, I cry out to you, God, from the depths, the sense of being low. We are taught that ideally the leader of prayer is supposed to stand in a low spot in order to appeal to God. A lot of discussions about synagogue architecture I'm not going to go into right now. But the sense of humility is what God is trying to convey to the nations when he presents this image of a valley. It's not a valley for war. It's a valley for humbling. The sin of the nations, who God is judging, is not a sin of killing us. God never said there that they killed us. It was that they degraded us. They sold us for the services of a zonah. They sold us for wine. That's why it's important that they be humbled. You degraded us, and therefore you must also be degraded and humbled in that valley. But note, it's not just a message for the nations. It's also a message for us. If you take a look at source number 15 on the source sheet, I'm going to post the link in the chat one last time. If you look at source number 15, God says to the Jews via the prophet Amos, woe to those who desire the day of God. You think it's a good thing, judgment day. What is the day of God to you? It will be darkness, not light, like one who flees a lion and encounters a bear, and he comes home and leaves his hand on the wall and is bitten by a snake. It's very much Amos' sense of humor. You have to read Amos in order to understand that. But the point that he's making is, if you don't learn that humility of the valley, then it's going to be bad for you also. Be careful what you wish for. So God puts this day of judgment in a valley in order to humble those nations and to teach us humility as well. I conclude with the review questions very quickly. The Valley of Jehoshaphat, between Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, and the Mount of Olives. biblical battles that occur in valleys. So you can look back earlier on the source sheet. I gave you a list in source number 3. According to Ibn Ezra, the judgment occurred in the time of King Yehoshaphat. According to most traditional commentators, it is a vision for a future messianic time. The sin of the nations is selling the Jews in a way that degrades them. And the point of being in the valley is to teach us that if you want to survive the day of judgment, you had better learn humility. That's the idea. Much more to be said, obviously, but it's 1:30, and so I turn over the floor to Rabbi Dr. Yaris. Rabbi Yaris, thank you so much for teaching for us yet again.